Hello, Marquette basketball fans. Welcome to another edition of the Golden Break. I'm your host, Adam Woke. Shout out to the production squad. Matthew, Robert, Micus, Dr. Michael, Keegan, and Jeffrey Gibellina Esquire. The show does not go without their support. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, at the Golden Break, where you will get announcements about shows like today. We got Coach Nevada Smith in the house with us, and we are very excited and very lucky to be able to spend some time learning more about this Marquette basketball team. And stick around to the end. I have a little homage to the greatest basketball fans in the world. But let's be honest, the real reason you're here is Coach Smith. Let's kick it over to him. All right, we are joined by Coach Nevada Smith. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
So I want to start at the end of last season. We had Tyler on earlier on this, actually a couple of weeks ago, and he spoke about the exit interviews that he does with the coaching staff and a lot of conversations about things that you want to kind of focus in on the offseason. From the coach's perspective, what is the process you all go through when it comes to determining who should work on what? And then, like, how do you develop and implement that plan for the months to come?
It's a very individual basis process. So obviously each guy needs different development areas. For Tyler example, his whole thing was we're going to break the shot down, get it back to where you feel comfortable. You know, for other guys, it was different things. So it literally is our coaching staff getting together, talking about each player, what we think they need to do, developing a plan of how they can do that, giving them the answers to the test, as coach likes to say, of, you know, how we're going to get better in the next, you know, 2 weeks, in the next month, in the next 3 months, in the next 5 months, and what that might look like. You look at, you know, Tyler, for example, it was, listen, man, you're not going to be able to shoot outside of 15 feet for probably a month. So just know that going in, know that, you know, you're not going to really be able to play a ton because you're not going to be able to do what you normally do. You know, other guys really needed to work on their bodies. You know, Stevie Mitchell and Osa Godaro really worked on their handle and owned that and wanted to get that part of their game better. So, you know, it's individual basis, but I think we have a great staff here for developing players and really developing people. You know, Cody Hyatt says it all the time, you know, player development is personal development. And I think our guys have done a great job of owning, you know, maybe an area they need to get better at, maybe an area they want to go from good to great, and really every little piece of the puzzle along the way.
Can you help me drill down to figuring out how you're going to get that player from A to B? So let's take Omax, for example, right? The development his body has made when it comes to feet and balance, right? Watching him last year, we kind of called him a baby deer because he was graceful at moments, but there are times we could still find, you could see he's kind of finding his legs. And oh my God, right? The development in that area has been incredible. So when you guys sit down and you're thinking, all right, how do you figure out who's going to take charge of that? Like, who's going to really kind of help Omax own that? And then what, we're going to put him through these drills, we're going to put him in front of these coaches. I want to know a little bit more about that part of the process.
It's a team effort with our staff. So everyone's involved. We all do little things with each guy, and it's spearheaded by, you know, a coach that kind of leads that development process. You know, Omax, you hit it on the head. It was balance. It was, you know, playing with better balance, playing more on balance, playing on balance on the move, stopping, being able to do stuff at the end of the stop. You know, and it's broken down by, you know, Todd Smith's involved. Our whole, you know, coaching staff's involved in how we're going to do that. And different things lead itself to different coaches' expertise. So it really is a shared group effort of, all right, why don't you take this part of this? You take this part of this. this is what we want to get out of this. You know, it's a group effort, you know, led by Coach Smart, and trickle down to us of this is how we're going to do things. And like I said, everybody's different, so I can't really give you a formalized plan of overall this is how we do it. But, you know, Tyler's a good example just because you talked to him already. Like, it was, all right, this is what you're going to do. This is how we're going to do this. This amount of hours per day, we're starting here, and you're going to get this to a point where it feels normal and it doesn't feel different. And then we're going to move on to this and move on to this. And by the end of the summer, you know, we hope it feels perfect from any spot on the floor that you might have to take a shot this season.
As you kind of go through the off season, and now you're gauging these guys, right? It's May, it's July, it's September, and you're starting to see, okay, player A really getting better at this. I'm really starting to see it. Player B, how does that start to fit the way you see the X's and O's during the season of like, hey, all right, now that I can see player A is doing this, we can do that. How, the marriage of those two things, I think, is important. So I'm interested for you as a coach, when does that start to galvanize itself? Are you like, you know what? I know we can do this now.
I think a lot of our development is geared around what we want them to do within our style of play. So a lot of that stuff is, these are the shots you got. These are the shots we can't anticipate you getting. These are the plays that you're going to be in position to make. How can we help you get really comfortable making those decisions, making those plays in the confines of development? And then, I mean, to be honest, we learn more from them than they learn from us. So, you know, we're playing 3-on-3 drill and you see something and it's like, wow, that was different. That could work. Let's try that again in a way that it's a subscribed called event. And you just kind of stumble on some things that you're like, man, that's pretty good. Like, the Oso inside hand finish, like, he kind of just did that and you're like, oh, well, okay. And then, you know, you get a guy like Coach Barry who's really good at seeing the next stages of development and, you know, took it to a different level. So it really is a combination of us trying to fit them into our style of play and what they're going to do, and then them kind of teaching us of like, hey, I got this in my bag, I can do this. How can we fit this in as well? And it's, you know, it's been a perfect marriage for this group. I mean, they're so unselfish. They just want to win. So you're seeing it now of the energy they play with, the enthusiasm. And that was built, you know, through the sweat and the work this summer.
Yeah, I like how you kind of talked about light bulb moments, right? You're out there at a practice like, oh, damn, he can do that. All right. Like, wow, I got some ideas now, some stuff that I can work with. Can you give me some more of those light bulb moments that separates last year's team from this year's team? Because I would imagine, especially when you got into the September, October, you know, practices, what were some other things that came up from those practices that you said, hey, we're going to do now? Like, for example, there's no doubt, obviously, the pistol action that you're running has a lot to do with Oso's growth and ability just to be able to handle that ball at the top of the key.
Yeah, I think he was probably one that we didn't know what we had when we got here, and still it's evolving daily of how well he can pass and handle the ball and make plays for other people and create offense. I mean, it's a weapon. I've said before, we have the two best passers at the position at two different positions. Like, we have Tyler and Oso. There's not anybody better passing the basketball at their positions than those two guys, which makes everybody's life a little bit easier, including our staff and our players, of, man, if you're open, these guys are going to get you the ball. So I think those were, you know, revelations of, okay, Cam, you do this, you're probably going to get it. Steve, you make this cut, you're probably going to get it. And it makes those guys want to do it more and harder, because they know if they do something, they're going to be rewarded for it. You watch a lot of basketball, you see a lot of basketball, you play a lot of basketball where you make a great cut and no one sees it. And it's, you know, it's like a tree falling in the forest. It's great, but you're not getting rewarded for it. So why would you do it again? Why would you continue to give yourself up? Why would you continue to go at 100 miles an hour to make that play and do your job of creating offense when, you know, you're not really getting rewarded for it? It's not an assist. It's not a steal. It's not a rebound. It's nothing. And our guys have bought into, you know, that's 2 points for Marquette. You know, if I make a cut and I don't get the ball, it's opening up something else. So that's been awesome. you know, you could dive into a million of these little cues. The OMAC or the Oso and Stevie two-man game has been different. They do it a lot.
They have their own little play. I heard, like, what is it called?
They Chubb do. Or Chubb. What do they call it? Yeah, Chubb. Little Chubb. So that just comes from guys playing together and having fun with each other. The connection that Cam and Tyler have, where they can lock eyes, you know, Jopp, I think, is starting to get there and really understanding where his plays are going to come. Omac's the same thing. Omac's in the paint with his pivots and pump fakes has grown tremendously in the last year.
How about his 2-foot jump stop? Oh my God. Like, what do you do when he does that?
If you watch it last year, you know, he traveled a lot of them. We played at Creighton. He made a great play, made a similar play to what he's doing now. And he traveled and, it was something you could show him and say, hey, we got to make the same play and we got to be better with our feet. And it's 2 points. And, he's taken off in that. And then the freshmen have really bought in. The biggest difference last year to this year from an offense perspective is our shot selection has been tremendous. It's taken another step. We lead the country in 2-point percentage because we take really good shots and most of our shots are layups. And we do a great job of getting to the paint. And last year's team, those guys' strengths were mid-range shots. And, you know, you're not going to shoot the same percentage you shoot when you're shooting layups. Just you can get hot. Like you remember Daryl Creighton hit about 6 in a row. But that's not the norm. That's not going to be the expected mean. You play to what you have, and our guys really bought into this is how we want to do it. These are the shots we want to take. We have a couple outliers of a Jopp who has a little bit of freedom, a Tyler, and also like those guys have some freedom to do some things. But for the most part, they're pretty aligned with, you know, this is what we want.
Well, I mean, if you compare shot charts from last year to this year, exactly what you're saying, right? Like you can see that this is a much more efficient offensive team. They're definitely attacking. And when we spoke last time, you said mid-range shots sometimes are the right shot. It sometimes actually is the best shot. And so I want to ask you, especially against UConn, it seems like this offense, the read and react style in which you play is what is the defense giving us? Let's attack it. And the UConn game I thought was really unique because you started to take, I don't want to call them mid-range, but there was more like 5-footers, 6-footers and stuff like that. Are you, when it comes to the read and react, what's the relationship between the players and the coaches in saying, all right, the team is giving us this, let's attack that?
Well, I mean, most of the time the ball's in the hands of two of the smartest players in the country, and they do a really good job of feeling the game and understanding, okay, if I go to this spot, it's going to be a little more congested. If I move it over 2 feet, I'm going to have a better angle, better play. And I think you saw that in that game. I thought Klingon defensively in the first half really changed shots. I mean, I think they blocked 9 shots in the first half.
Yeah.
And we only missed like 15. So it was kind of insane. And then those guys kind of figured, okay, I'm going to stay back a step. I'm going to get a little running start, pull them out a little bit, and I can get the little 5-foot floater with the glass off the little pick and roll or the little DHO or whatever the action might be. Like the end game can be just a little different. And, you know, those aren't mid-range shots, as you said. They're paint shots. They're not at the rim, but they're paint shots, and that's what we want. You're not going to get every play at the rim. You know, Tyler's got the little floater. Stevie and Cam have their little float game that, you know, they're all different. They're not all the same. Oso has a really good one. His push shot's been great. You know, some of his post moves have been pushed out to 5 or 6 feet, the little hook shots. You can remember at Providence, they're bodying him to, he starts at 2 feet, he ends up at 7 feet. So those guys are pretty good at adjusting in the game. And it's a constant conversation and, you know, little eyeball looks during the game of, hey, like, move it. Hey, do this. And they see it too. They feel it, in the moment. Those two guys in those actions just feel it different. And I'll tell you what, it's got to be hard for defenses because we have Tyler who comes off that stuff and Cam, and they're completely different offensive players, and you have to guard it differently. And if you, with all the movement we do to create different matchups and all the switching the teams do, if you're not locked in on who you have, you're going to be a step behind. And that's our whole, goal is get them a step behind and then, you know, make the next right play.
Well, it's almost at a point. I was trying to do this the other day. I was like, okay, if I was going to strategize against us, what would I do? the reality is it feels very much like if I'm a opposing coach, I almost have to live with something. I'm either going to have to live with giving up some shots at the arc. I'm going to have to live with maybe giving up a little less help at the hoop, right? It's kind of hard to scheme against, which says a lot about your trust in the team, right? Your trust in the players to do that. Because at the same time, like you said, you've got some of the smartest guys out there. I'm sure there are, you know, there's teams and guys you've coached. We say, listen, I've got to put the brakes, or I've got to, like, you can't do this. Like, this is just something that's not going to work. What is, in your time coaching, right, all the places that you've been, is this one of the highest levels of trust you've had in guys to be able to navigate some of this stuff?
Yes. There's only one team that's even comparable. It was when I was coaching at RGV, my first year, I had a group of guys that bought in completely to what we were doing. The problem with that is they were so good, we lost half of them to the NBA. But yeah, similar buy-in to that of like, they understand what we want, understand how to get there. They understand they're going to be successful. And the way they share it, we don't really have to take bad ones. Like you said, you're going to have to give up something. That's always been my defensive idea anyways. Is like, the defense is going to have to give you something. They can't take everything away. But for us, what do you even pick? You know, you have options, I guess, and maybe we can miss some shots. Maybe we certainly haven't been perfect. We've certainly had some bad shooting nights, you know, the second half at Xavier, where I thought we generated some decent looks that just didn't go in, and that's going to happen. But as long as our process is pretty good, the way that we shoot the ball, the areas we shoot the ball, the volatility just isn't as high as it was last year from a standpoint of big runs the other teams can go on, because we're scoring at a decent rate. You know, we're not taking five straight mid ranges. We miss all those. You know, we're taking five straight plays at the rim. It's going to be very tough to miss five straight of those. So I just think those runs that other teams can go on haven't really been there because of our ability to get the right shot over and over and over again.
Have you been, what's it been like in the chess match with other Big East coaches? You know, there's some good coaches in this conference. Has there been a game or a moment where like, all right, coach, I see you. Like, I see that's a good call there where you had to pivot. Like, well, I'm just interested because especially with some of the additions of coaches from, I mean, Shaka last year and Sean Miller this year, like it just can add Cooley. There's just so many guys. I'm just very interested what that's been like for you, Shaka, and the rest of the guys.
No, it has been. Every game we have to adjust to something. I feel like every game when coach and I talk about, okay, what are we going to do? It's, you know, this is what I think they're going to do, but man, maybe not. Maybe they do this. Like, I could see them possibly doing this. You know, we got to be ready for A, B, and C. I think in that order is the most likely thing. And all of a sudden you get to the game and all of a sudden there's D that you haven't really been ready for. And it's a testament to our guys that they've been in most of these situations. With our non-conference schedule, we saw a lot of different defenses and a lot of different ways that teams tried to slow it down. So we haven't run into anything yet that has been like, I don't know what we can do. I think, you know, there's a lot of teams in our league that try to ice on the side and try to keep the ball on the side, and you can't do it the way we play. We play too fast. So you hear these teams calling ice and they try to get there and we're just coming off normal, getting to the middle. So I like when teams try to ice us because it's nothing, you know, it's just a regular action for us. How fast our guys get into it, you just can't get to the right spots. But I think some of the second time you play a team, you see something that you're like, okay, that makes sense. You usually see the first play or the second play, what they thought their big adjustment might be. And you still have 30, 38, 38 and a half minutes to adjust to that. And once you see it, you should be able to, you know, the nice thing about our team is we have kind of solutions to problems. So we can kind of figure it out.
I want to talk about what you were talking about, icing, especially and tempo, because I had heard in talking with Tyler and Ben Steele brought this up too, that this year on the court, at the start of the year, you guys really brought the axes further out, really wanted to space the court even more. And what I think is important about spots on the court, it's not just about like getting to the, because if there's teams, I think they get to the spot and then like stall, right? Where are we all in our spots, right? And then you get into your stuff. You guys play through your spots. right? You get 2 minutes so quick. It's so fast. But also, if you just look at it analytically, right, we are a little bit slower in tempo than we were last year. Help me understand that. Like, was that intentional? Like, because you're still playing. I don't feel like it's a slow game by any means, right? It was just different from last year. So I was kind of curious with the way that you extended the court, getting guys two spots and seeing that slight dip in tempo. Was that on purpose? Is that something that you guys wanted to try to accomplish?
Well, I think I talked to you last year. Tempo is a bad stat. Tempo is how quickly you shoot. It has no bearing on how fast you actually play or how much you move. It's like how quick you shoot. And, you know, last year we had Daryl and Justin were getting them up. Like, so our tempo is quick. Those guys were firing the ball up there if they could see the rim. So our pace is way better. Our speed is way better. But we have such great passers and we share it that, you know, we're taking a little bit more time than we probably, you know, did last year. You know, it's a different pace of the game, depending on who has the ball for us too. So how quickly we get into things changes. And I think it's a good mix of guys that we have that can, and I mean, we have seven guys that can initiate offense, maybe eight. And then the spacing, you're right. Like, we want to get to spots to start. We want to pull defenses where we want to pull them. And then we're going to move out of those spots and we might get back to them in mid possession, depending on how the ball looks and where the floor looks. But we just wanted to space a little bit more. We thought with the shooting we have, you got to respect our guys wherever they are. And I think it's been really good. Our guys have been really good with it. You can tell when we're really spaced out, it looks, you can really see it. And mid possession, when we get in trouble is when our spacing collapses and it's not as good as it was. And we think maybe someone's going to shoot it and they don't. And the quickness that we can get respaced, you know, is one of the things we need to keep getting better at. And I think it's a great area of growth for us for the next 10 regular season games of, you know, can we do a better job of getting spaced? And you can see a couple games, you know, a couple of the last ones you play at Xavier and the game is bang, bang, bang in the first half. And they slowed it way down. Their tempo dictated the second half. They slowed it down. They held the ball longer. They ran more offense. And Seton Hall, the same thing. Like, they did not want to get up and down. They did not want to, you know, get in a sprint with us. And it was a lot of times the other team's offense is changing the tempo of the game.
Speaking still on those spots in the court, those can change a little bit, but maybe not change, but a different way to talk about it is how you initiate your offense can be different, right? Sometimes you can dribble at the wing and you can do a DHO, hand it off to him, he comes to the top, right? There's double screens. How do you guys determine how you initiate offenses on multiple, on possession after possession?
When we're just in, obviously if we call something that initiates it, but if it's just flow is more where the ball is and where the guys are, we can be aligned in different areas depending on how we run, depending on how the break starts, depending on where the ball might be. We could be five out, we could be four around one, we could be, you know, three guards on one side and the ball on a big on the other side. Like, we can do so many different things based on how we run. And that dictates how the action kind of starts. You know, it's 9% of the time start with Tyler or Oso. And then we kind of get into the flow and movement and how we're going to play off of that. But it's really dictated on how we sprint the floor, which can change every possession.
In the read and react that we were talking about, and that's actually take the action I was just talking about, right? Point guard dribbles to the wing, wing comes at them. There's a couple of different actions, right? Sometimes you could back cut, right? Sometimes you could DHO, sometimes you can fake it, come around. What are you coaching the players to look for in the defense to determine the next action? Like, what is going to determine the guy off the ball to make the back cut instead of coming around the DHO? Like, because that's interesting. That's the interesting IQ stuff, right? That you want to make sure if you're going to run this system, guys have to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah, we do a lot with individual defenders of the opposition and, you know, what their strengths and weaknesses are. How we want to attack it. If they're going to give us something, if they're just playing us in a spot where we should back cut, then we got to do it. If they're playing us in a spot where we need to come off, then we got to do it. And then you read the next thing, you know, you make one read, then you got to make another, and then you got to make another, and they stack each other. And you're reading the defense And you're reading where your offensive players are, right? You're reading where your teammates are. And that's it. And it's way more complex than I just made it sound. But that is the core of it of, all right, what's the defense doing? How are they playing us? Okay, let's do this. Let's take this next action. How are they playing us? Where's the big, where's the guard, where's the protection? And it's all done pretty quickly. You know, it's snap decisions, and you can be wrong and still be right. So that's the nice thing about the way we play and space the floor is you can make the wrong decision and still be fine. We're not going to be 100%.
These guys have really seemed to soak that up though, because of the unison in which they play. You said this earlier that sometimes if a guy makes a cut, it's like a tree that falls in the forest. Coach, I want you to know that I hear it. Most of the people make fun of me because I get so excited about cutting. It's such a beautiful part of the game, especially when it works well. So I got to ask you this question, because last year you said the last Texas team that you guys were with was an elite cutting unit. Has the Marquette team this year reached that?
Yeah. I thought our best cutting game of the year was Seton Hall. I thought the speed that we made cuts opened up the floor. And I think we're getting better at it. I think they're taking the lead of Stevie Mitchell. I thought Chase Ross had a game where he had some elite cuts off the ball. Omax, you know, we're missing him a little bit on cuts. Just we got to do a better job of seeing him a little bit earlier. And, you know, I think Tyler and Cam each had a really good cut in the Seton Hall game. And those are the two guys that probably are waiting for the ball. So maybe they're not cutting as much as some of those other guys. But I thought it was the best cutting game of the year. And we need to build on it and grow on it and keep going. Because when we do that and the floor gets spaced in a certain way, it pulls help out. And when the help is gone, we kind of do a great job of seeing that blood in the water and kind of attacking you know, a weakness. So the cutting really opens up our offense, and it's been getting better all year. You know, I think Stevie, like I said before, has sustained his ability to cut for, you know, 20 plus games, and getting those other guys to join the party has been nice.
All right, Coach, I need your help with something. Rebounding mystifies me. I'm not even just talking about this team, right? I'm just talking about it philosophically. Every coach I talk to, players, I feel like I always get the same answer of like, hey, you know what? It's about effort. It's about focus. And I never get more than that. And listen, I'm not saying that effort and focus aren't important, but effort and focus are important in every aspect of the game, from shooting, dribbling, offense, defense. You could pick any aspect of it. Tell me if you agree with this or not. I feel like I'm getting to the point where some of rebounding is a bit of an art. It's a bit of a knack that maybe some of these guys have, which is, I think, hard, you know, especially when I was coaching. The one thing I got frustrated sometimes because I would always like, all right, let's hit the body, right? Find the guy, hit him, box him out. And I struggled. I wasn't a good coach anyway, but I struggled to like really find ways to drill that where I saw a major difference on the court. What have you learned philosophically about rebounding in that way? Am I way off?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, for us on, you know, offensive and defensive rebounding are two different deals. You know, for us, our size is, you know, something people look at as a disadvantage. We don't look at it that way, but we know we just have to be better in certain areas. And defensive rebounding is the biggest area where we need to be really good at being, you know, technically correct. And when we have to box out and we have to punish every time and we need to hit bodies and, you know, the ones that really that we're doing a better job of and huge growth from last year is if Oso goes to block a shot, someone comes down and rotates and cracks his guy. And that's, you know, that's been a big area, you know, moving forward. And the tough part is we have some great elite offensive rebounding teams in our league that we got to go against with some monsters in there that, you know what, you can do a great job. They're still going to get it. You could box them up. Ball's just going to come to them because they're 7-2 and we can't get to that spot. But if we continuously do the right thing every time, I it kind of evens it out. And I think, you know, on the offensive end, you know, Cody has done a great job of getting our guys with a mentality of you're going every time. Like our guys that go, like you're going, and you're not just aimlessly going and running in there and saying you went. You're, you know, you're reading the basketball. You're getting an idea of what spots the balls are going to come to. We did a study this summer, like where every missed three in the Big East went last year. from what spot and where it ended up, and getting those guys to understand, like, if that spot's not taken, go take it. You saw an elite one against Seton Hall, David Joplin. It was a corner three. He ran into the middle, saw the ball, saw it was going to come off opposite corner, got it, laid it in the first half. You know, he couldn't do that last year. So I think, you know, rebounding at its core is you're either you're a good rebounder or you're not. You either want to do it or you're not. You either want the ball or you don't. But I do think you can get incrementally better just with some different emphasis points. And I think reading the ball on offense is huge, and just making sure you make contact on the defensive end. But I mean, don't get it twisted. We're not going to be Houston. We're not going to be the best rebounding team in the country, just the way we're built and how we play. But we can still be better. I think it's an area of growth for us on both ends that we stress every day. And I think you have seen a growth in that area.
Earlier, you said part of like the defensive mindset, right, is, you know, sometimes you're going to have to give something up. So let's talk about this team defensively. There's been some stuff that I love about this team, the way that we attack passing lanes, the way we double in the post. Our rotations have been fantastic. But defensively, too, we've had moments where we haven't been at our best. What are you guys in the coaching staff seeing as some of the problem areas defensively? And is some of it just based on the style of play? Like, are you going to end up getting beat to the hoop sometimes because a guy took a shot at jumping a passing lane? And so be it, you live with that.
You know, I think the biggest adjustment, I think, you know, Coach Barry and Coach Haynes do a great job with our defense. And you know, after the game at Providence, the mindset of, we're not going to let their main guy beat us. We're not going to let Bryce Hopkins go for 29 and 23. We're taking that away. Has changed our mentality. And I thought we've had moments this year where we've been elite defensively. You know, we just got to be more consistent. I think that's the term that we're kind of using, is we just got to be more consistent. And you saw a little bit of that at Seton Hall. When we can turn people over, you know, we are an elite defense. We're going to give up some stuff. You have to. There's nothing. You can't take everything away. But I think our guys are really doing a great job of deflections, you know, seeing the ball, understanding where guys are going to be, and really learning how to play with each other. You know, how much help does, you know, one guy need opposed to the other? You know, that stuff is learned. You know, it's not you're not just going to go out there and play pickup with a bunch of guys you don't know and be perfect. You know, our guys are continuously getting better. I thought, you know, if we can build on Seton Hall and have that kind of effort for 40 minutes, you know, we're gonna get to a point where, you know, you're talking about, man, a Marquette defense is elite, because we see it every day. I said it before. I don't remember who I was talking to. We're good on offense because our defense is elite in practice, and we have to go against it every single day. And it's not easy to score. It's not easy to get great shots. It's not easy, you know, to take care of the ball and not turn it over. So we get practice against an elite defense every day. And it's coming along. I think, you look at our guys' growth in that area, and you're seeing us doing a great job contesting shots and getting dot hands up and doing a great job of boxing out. Now there might be a play we miss one. But as you said, sometimes we take some shots where we don't put our defense in a great spot. And, you know, it's hard to guard 2-on-2 in space. It's hard to guard 1-on-1. You know, you turn it over in a bad spot, like, it's, there's not much you can do. So I think that the mentality of not letting their A-man beat us has changed our mentality, and they've done a great job with it.
We had Ben Steele on about a month ago, and he said, hey, you know, I don't know how we got on the topic of you, but he's like, yeah, you know, Nevada's got some interesting basketball quirks, thoughts about the game that might spit in the wind of the traditionalist. And one of the things you brought up was one-hand passes, which I thought was really interesting, because as many people have heard me say before, I remember our head coach screaming at guys at the high school level, we don't throw one-hand passes. But, you know, guys like Tyler, he has that ability. So I want to ask you this. Are there other philosophies, perspectives you have on the game that spit a little bit in the wind of the traditionalist?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I have a theory that if you have the other team has the ball and it's a tie game under 30, it's a European thing. that you should foul to make sure that you get the ball back and take the last shot, whether you be now down one, down two. I just think that's what you should do. A lot of teams foul up. I don't see that analytically. I know people think that is a good thing. I would not do that. But I mean, when I was in a D-League and the other team had the ball and there was no shot clock and it was a tie game, we fouled to get it back. One, you know, we thought our offense was good enough to score and we wanted to dictate the game. I'm a big believer in you take the last shot of every half. You got to figure out a way to do that, which is, that's not crazy. That's not really crazy. The one hand pass thing, the way I think is, if someone teaches something and you hear it every day, like, why not do the opposite and see what happens? So if a defense is taught, when you see people put two hands on the ball to get back to your man, so why would you ever put two hands on the ball and let them have a half a second advantage on the ball? Like, we're just not going to do that. And it's not to say like every pass needs to be whipped one-handed. It's when you're on the move, you have to throw a one-handed pass. You know, if you're just whipping it around the perimeter and you're not on the move and you're stationary, yeah, just throw it two hands, whatever. You're kicking a ball out from the post and you have it two hands, yeah, throw it out. But you know what? We've had some elite plays this year where Oso is backing down his guy and they come and he throws a one-hand pass out and the defense has to adjust to it late. And we go bing, bing and get a driving angle or get a three. So, you know, trying to do things that goes against the grain, goes against the norm, can sometimes be you know, some low-hanging fruit, an advantage that other teams aren't taking that that you can take. So there's a lot more. I have a lot more crazy ideas, but yeah, that,
we'll save them for another interview. We won't get them.
Yeah, I mean, they're not too outlandish. Some of them might be. Some of my 2-for-1 shots that I would be okay with are probably not okay with any other person in America. But it's all about flipping stuff. Flipping things in your advantage, even when the advantage is so small, over time, those advantages become pretty big gaps.
Coach, let me get you out here on this. What ambitions do you have for yourself as a coach when you see yourself 5, 10, 15 years down the road?
I just want to make sure that we do a good job today and to make sure our guys are ready to go. I've never been one to think about down the road. I'm pretty centered on, I just want to make sure Cam Jones is in the right mindset to get there on Saturday and bomb a couple balls from wherever he wants to bomb them from. You know, anything else that happens, you can't control it anyway, so there's no use thinking about it. And I have a great situation with Coach Smart. I love it. I love it here. I love it with our guys. Our staff's amazing. So we just want to do the best we can every day and see where this ride ends up.
Well, I appreciate that answer. I think that's some of the hardest things to do for us to stay in the moment. So we greatly appreciate your time, Coach, and good luck the rest of the season.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you. Sorry I was a little late today.
Oh, no worries. It's the snow, right? People don't know how to drive. Hey, it. People don't know what they're doing out there.
That's one thing. Can we get Wisconsin drivers to be a little bit better with a little bit of snow?
Hey, I mean, listeners, you hear that? Can you help this man out? He's trying to get to work. Can we drive a little bit better?
I grew up in Pittsburgh. I lived in New York. It's not like this out there. They're probably crazier.
All right, Coach. Thanks again for your time.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Later.
What a fantastic interview. Thank you so much, Coach Smith, for joining us today. We greatly appreciate your time. I wanted to just take a minute to take a step back and smell the roses. I asked out on Twitter this week for fans to share their favorite moments with this Marquette team. And it's really been awesome to read through everyone's memories, the things that have really stood out to them. You know, at the end of the day, this is basketball. It's a game. It doesn't really matter. There are things in this world that matter much more. But I do think that games like basketball are important for the sense of community. We have a really cool community as Marquette basketball fans over these 3 years, and I feel like even more so this year. I've been very lucky to get to know many of you just via Twitter, conversations through social media, and it has made me feel very lucky just to be a part of all of this. This was not the intention when we started this show, but to see where it's gone, to see how great this community is, and just enjoying the game, enjoying the players, enjoying the team, and enjoying each other. So I wanted to take a minute and share my favorite moment right alongside the greatest fans in college basketball. And for me, it's kind of weird. It's a little stupid, but I think personified the whole season. When Cam Jones leaped into the air at the same time as Chase Ross throwing down that dunk, it reminded me of a band who plays perfectly in time with one another. He leaped at the same time, and as the ball got dunked, he landed at that same time. It reminded me of being at a concert with whoever, in that moment where a band, like there's a break in the song or there's a buildup, and together in unison, all the members of the band hit the next note simultaneously, perfectly in time with one another. And when you feel that in a concert, you feel like you're really watching something special. Real artists, people who practice their craft and practice it to the point where they produce it at a high level. And again, right, this wasn't even really a basketball action in some sense, but it spoke to how locked in these guys are with one another. It felt like it was a band in perfect time with itself. And if you really think about that through the lens of what we've seen all season with this team and how they play within this offensive system, I guess I'm not surprised. But I wanted to share that moment with you because it really led me down that rabbit hole of thinking about how cool it is to watch a team play so in sync with one another. Thank you so much for joining us. Not sure when the next pod is. We got a couple of irons in the fire. Some people we've reached out to. We're going to continue to try to bring you more people. But we greatly appreciate your time. Have a fantastic day. We out.